Hi, I'm Paulina.
Hi, I'm Bricia.
And we're sisters, friends, daughters, wives, and business owners.
And we're just following our dreams, you know, working to be a better version of ourselves every day. All right. And we're also moms.
Welcome to the Super Mama Sisterhood. Hello.
Hi, Super Mamas.
Hello, everybody.
Happy New Week.
Happy New Week. Is that a thing?
How is your 2020 going?
2020 is looking great.
Is your
great.
Vision clear already?
No, I'm actually me estoy poniendo más ciega cada vez. My glasses need more prescription.
It is funny how in the first 2 weeks, everyone's all about new year, new me. And then it's like, back to old me.
Back to old me.
Can't see anymore. Vision's getting blurry.
No, I mean, you know, I...
Tell me about this Rachel Hollis beginning of your day situation. Is it working out for you? Are you
doing
it?
I mean, it's rarely my second day.
Did you do it one day?
It's rarely my second
day.
That's
good. That's 2 days on. That's good.
2 days.
You feel good.
Well, you know, I actually, when we came back from Disney World, it just happened organically that I took a 2 week fast for social media first. First of all, I haven't been on social media in 2 weeks.
That's awesome.
I haven't posted anything or anything because when we came back, I was very anxious. I started getting panic attacks and anxiety attacks again.
How do those work for you? How do those manifest for you, actually? Not how do those work for you? I know they don't work out for you, but how do those manifest in your body and how do you know you were getting them?
Well, first, when we came back, you know, there were situations that we have to like encounter when going back to like reality, right? Like mm-hmm. You're like in this cloud in Disney World and we come back to real life. And then, you know, there's so many things going on. So I think first is just like anxious, like, oh my God, something bad's going to happen. Like
so
I started
you actually
having,
think that.
Oh yeah. I woke up every day thinking like, oh my God, something bad's going to happen. Like there's something bad that's going to happen today. I don't know what it is. And then you start getting this like anxious feeling of like you start breathing like faster. I start breathing faster because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, I'm scared. And
you start breathing faster in the morning as soon as you
just
wake
like,
up.
Yeah. As soon as I wake up, as soon as I wake up. And then the other thing that was happening was like, I wanted my days to be so long because I didn't want the next day to come. So I started binging on TV until like really late. Oh. I would put my kids to bed really late because I didn't want to be alone. And my husband would be like, come to bed. And I was like, no, I'll be there later. And I would go to sleep in the couch because I was making my day longer. And because the next day would come.
I would think you would want your day to finish and you would want to go to sleep.
No.
Well, I mean, it just depends. Everyone deals with anxiety different.
Mm-hmm. And then I would do that and then I was just numbing myself every afternoon just watching movies or mm-hmm. whatever, right? I was just consuming a lot of things that didn't really do anything for me. Mm-hmm. So as the days progressed, I was just getting more and more depressed because nothing good was coming in.
Right.
So I was like, well, I'm just going to take the weekend and then on Monday, I'm going to be like 100%, right?
Right.
And
I mean, that's normal.
That's what
to
everybody
think.
Says. And mm-hmm. so like the weekend came and, you know, same thing. I was just dragging myself. I actually like I had Elizabeth come over to the house and we had like 2 bottles of wine. And, you know, I was just like
normal day.
And, you know, because everything just seems so out of proportion. Everything, like every little thing just seems out of proportion. Like mm-hmm. something happened and then like I just like blew it up. So, you know, the anxiety grows and grows inside more and more and more because you're thinking like something bad and then this is bad. So more bad things are happening. And like I always tend to go to the worst thing that can happen. And like the worst scenario is in my mind 24/7. Like, you know, I did an exercise right. a long time ago with my therapist and everything ends up in death for me. So like the worst case scenario where like everybody's right. dying.
You don't have to say it out loud, but everyone can figure it out.
But you know, like yeah. it's just like that, those kind of situations,
and
right?
you think that
oh, I'm,
all day?
I'm carrying this inside of me all the time.
Wow.
So I am like, you know, on Sunday, I barely managed to get myself up to go to church. And I was like, I have to go to church. I just felt like I needed to go. And when I was there, like I felt so much better, but also.
And also the message about perspective.
The verses about perspective. And so I started to think like, oh my God, I'm not like, I need to change something. Something needs to happen, but I didn't do anything. I just started thinking it. So the next morning when it was time to send the kids back to school, like back to normal thing, that morning, I just couldn't. I could not take it anymore. And I went to my husband and I said, I need to talk to you. I need to tell you something. And I told him exactly how I felt. And that alone made such a huge difference because I had been carrying this inside of me on my own for days, and just letting it out was so much easier. It's like it just made it more bearable. Like listening to somebody else tell me, it's everything's going to be fine. Nothing's going to happen. You're going to be okay. And I decided to just dive in into what I know to do, you know, which is get close to God and is just working on myself and working on my body. Like the same things that I already know, but it just like woke me up and I was like, I need to get back into this. Like I need to get back into taking care of myself. And also the other thing that I did that was the scariest thing to do was that one day I call a friend of mine. And I told her how I felt. I was driving home and I told her and I called her and I was like, you know, this is happening. I'm so anxious. Like, I'm still anxious. And then she said, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I told her exactly what I thought was the worst thing that could happen. And she said, and? And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, well, what if that happens? So what? And I didn't even consider that. Because, you know, you're so afraid of that happening that you don't consider like, well, what if it does? And what, you know, so what? Not the death part, but like, so what, right? So what if that happens? So what if the worst thing that you think can happen? Like, so what? And I was like, I don't know. I never even thought about that. So she was like, well, think about it. You know,
what? And then call me back.
No. And, you know, she said, you know, she's a friend from church. So she said, just surrender everything. Just surrender everything. Just, you know, if you, whatever has to happen will happen. So just let it go. Just let it go because there's nothing you can do about it.
So true.
And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, whatever will happen will happen. Like there's not like me worrying this way. It's not going to change anything. Like in fact, it's just going to make things worse because my perspective is so blurry right now that I just think that everything is the worst thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the next day I also got together with you guys and then I let some more things out. And then I went to my therapy again the day after and I let it out again. And I just felt like the more I said it and the more I said things, I was just like, oh, well, it's not that bad. You know, it's not like I should just worry. I should just think, what is this that I'm going through is going to teach me? I that's the way that I chose to look at things. What is this going to teach me? Or what am I supposed to be learning from this experience that I'm going through? It's hard AF, but what am I supposed to learn?
And what is it doing for you?
What is it doing for me instead of like, what is it going to, how is it going to end my life? So then I decided to every morning, because I wake up and I take the kids to school, then I get to the restaurant for 20 minutes. I stay in my car. I stayed in my car the first week and the first thing I did was just like, you know, just be quiet and just talk to God and have a real conversation. Like, not like praying, but like have a conversation. And I had a conversation every morning. And the first morning I said, I don't know how to listen to you. I don't know how to listen to you. Please teach me how to listen to you because I don't know. Like, I know you're trying to tell me something, but I don't know what that is. So just teach me how to listen to you. And I was just very honest. And I said, you know, I'm scared. This is happening, but I'm going to give it up to you. And you're going to tell me what to do. But I just want you to tell me, I want you to tell me how, teach me how to listen to you so that I can follow what you want me to do.
Right.
Because I think that's the hardest thing. And it was so weird because that day in the afternoon, a friend of mine said, you know, I've been thinking about you a lot and I wanted to send you this video. And she sent me a song and she sent me a video and I was at my table with the kids and Ramiro and they were eating and I was in my computer and I had the headphones on and I listened to this song and I cried like, I don't know when was the last time I cried like that. And they were like looking at me like, are you okay? Mom, are you okay? And Ramiro was like, what happened? Are you okay? Like, and I was like, God is talking to me. Like, leave me alone. It's so weird that I say this. Yeah, I was like, this is so weird to say this out loud, but that's exactly what happened. Like, exactly what I needed. Exactly what I needed to hear. They sent me, happened. And so then I was like, okay, it's working, right? Me having this conversation every morning, it's working. So then every day that week, I did that. And I cannot tell you the difference that made. Just that. the difference that alone made, just to have time in the, like 20 minutes in the morning in the car, being quiet, just listening to my thoughts and just, you know, sorting things out and saying, okay, what do I want to accomplish today? What are the things that I want to do? So this weekend, I came across the podcast and it said how to make your morning productive.
The Rachel Hollis podcast.
And it said how to make your morning productive. So I was like, okay, well, let me listen to it and see how I can tweak what I'm already doing. So I'm taking it to the next level.
You're going all in.
I was like, well, you know, because it did me so good in such a short period of time. Yes. You know, I was literally dying inside. I can't even expect, people have anxiety can relate to me. And I know this is, people that don't have anxiety cannot relate. Like, I can tell you a thousand things and you won't, but that fear that's just like, you can't control it, and the breathing and like, the Alka-Seltzer feeling that I feel on my neck and my back. It's just so, I can't.
It's real. It's real. It's a physiological manifestation of anxiety.
So, you know, I said, I'm going to take this to the next level and I'm going to see what that can do for my life. Just because if it changed so much in a week, and I mean, I think, I don't know if you can feel me that I'm different from last week, but I know my husband has, my kids have, people like my friends that I see.
I noticed a difference from you last week on Wednesday, I think. It was either Wednesday or Thursday that I saw you and I thought, oh, wow, like she's like on the flow.
Yeah, because you have to want to get better. I think, you know, for a long time, I just thought, this is the way that supposed that life is. But I've learned to recognize my triggers. I've learned to recognize like what really gets me this. And, you know, I'm still in the same situation. Things have not changed, but like my attitude has changed. And like, you know, they were saying perspective of things. So the morning routine is, it's hardcore, but like if you really, you know, I just thought like I'm going to take this challenge on myself for the next 30 days. And if it works, then I'll keep doing it. And if not, I'll just change it. But what I'm doing is like I'm waking up at 5 a.m. And the first thing that I do, and the thing that she said the most is like when you wake up at 5 a.m. and you start working or you start checking emails, or you start, then you start giving other people your energy. So you have to have to give yourself like the first hour of your life. And then she was saying, because a lot of people, another thing that hit me hard was that people say, oh, I'm going to give myself me time at night. I'm going to watch something. But she said that you're already so tired and spent that you're giving yourself crumbs of what you could give yourself when you have a lot of energy.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, that makes sense, you know? And I'm still doing at night my face routine or whatever, but it's not like, that's not my me time. So I will,
yeah, and
I
washing go, your face is not a very luxurious experience. It's more of like, fuck, I gotta wash my face.
And it's, you know,
it's not like, hey, let's go wash my face, me time.
It's like, you know, it's not me time. So what I've been doing for the past 2 days, it's not a long time, guys.
You're
but,
doing
you know,
it, though.
I'm doing it. It's like I go into my office and the first 30 minutes, I read the Bible. Like I study it. I'm studying the Bible.
Wow, that's awesome.
I'm highlighting, making notes. I look back at the message from the pastor, like the scriptures that he gives, and like go really deep and read it. I just learn, you know, like I ask God what he wants to tell me. So I need to like, you know, give him some structure. And then I write the gratitude journal, which is 10 things that I'm thankful for that happened the day before. And then I write 10 dreams that I want to accomplish, which is, takes like 5 minutes. It's not like...
But doesn't she say to write it like it happened?
Yeah, like it already happened. Okay. Like,
because I think that's a very important part of
you know
routine.
What? The one thing that I was like, I'm traveling first class all the time.
Yes. Well, that you got to write it out, girl. Yeah. Manifest it to the world. Like it otherwise... And I think a lot of people get... They're scared. Yeah. You know, they're scared to speak out loud the life they want to live. But I think that happens from, again, I go back to growing up Latina and growing up as a person of color and growing up being told that you're not good enough to do that. And why should you even dream about doing that? No seas así, eres muy así, o eres muy...
Yeah.
You know, those words in Spanish that are very strong.
Yeah. Creída, te sientes mucho.
Yeah, well, like creída, but also, what is that word when you want to achieve something?
Ambiciosa.
Oh, right. Like that's a, you know.
Yeah, ambiciosa.
That word has like a very negative connotation in Spanish. when you're saying you're I'm ambitious, it sounds very different to me. Yeah. It might have a different context to different people.
It's true. It's
but
true.
But to me, if someone...
Es una ambiciosa. It's the telenovela's fault.
Usurpadora.
Usurpadora ambiciosa.
Yeah, like... And I
solo
think,
quiere dinero.
Right. And I think it was because... And we, Paulina, you and I really grew up in a very, very deep telenovela culture.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I know all telenovelas.
That is how... I mean, I think I stopped watching novelas in my... when I was 23. So imagine, I mean, think about, at 23, I stopped, like the last novela I watched was Rubí, I think, or Amor Eterno. I think that was like the last two that I watched. But from Ojitas de Color de Rosa when I was 19 there, that's a lot of content
that's a
in
lot.
My brain.
From Carrusel.
Yeah, Corazón de las Américas, you know.
It's a novela for kids.
So sick. Anyway, sorry, I digress. But I think it's because we grew up with these very strong words that we don't allow our mind and brain and soul to reach that next level of that next level of by high vibration and live in that place where you can actually sit down and write, I have $1 billion in my account and believe it. And I think that's the hardest thing, that when you're writing, like, I'm flying first class through the world, you have to believe it. And you more you write it out, the more you'll start to believe it.
Oh, trust me, girls. I put Disney World in my vision board like 2 years ago and it happened. So write it out. Write it
out.
But
anyway, keep going.
And then after that, I read 20 minutes of a book. Like I started reading a book that you gave me, which was I'm going to teach you how to be rich, or how does it go?
Oh yeah, I will teach you to be rich, I think. We'll rank it on the show notes. Yeah, I freaking love that book. That book changed my life.
So I'm reading it yesterday and today, 20 minutes, also taking notes and like writing things down.
That seems like a lot.
But it's not. It's not.
Okay.
And then I work out for 30 minutes. And then I've been working out for 30 minutes. And then by that time...
That's an hour and a half.
By that time, it's 6:30 and I wake up the kids. And then I start getting ready to go to work. So in an hour and a half, I accomplish all of that I've been wanting to do for the longest. I've been wanting to read. I've been wanting to read the Bible. I've been wanting to work out. And I already... Like my body, because of what you said, the time change... I haven't had a problem waking up that early. My husband wakes up at 4:30. So at that time, he leaves the house already by 5. And I was staying in bed before. So then now I just wake up and I just keep going. And I went to get the heater for the office. I got me a plant already today. And it's barely 10 in the morning. And I did all of that. So I was thinking, I was like, oh, okay. You know, it's my second day.
Yeah.
I'll keep you guys updated, but if you want to go hardcore on, I need to do that. I realize, and my therapist told me the same thing. I need a lot of structure. I need structure because otherwise I go back right into the, you know, my mind, my mind needs to be busy.
What time are you putting yourself to bed?
This week at 10, because I have to have commitments at night, but usually I'm going to target 9:30 to go to sleep.
Oh, that's crazy. If you wake up at 5?
That's 7 hours.
Oh, no, girl.
That's 8 hours. 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 8 hours. 9:30 to 5? That's 7.5 hours.
I feel like you should go to sleep at 8:30 or 8.
Well, I'm barely working on my waking up routine.
I know, but I think, well, that you should do that next. If you are really committing yourself to waking up at 5:30 in the morning, you should be dead asleep, like dead asleep by 9. Like asleep.
Yeah,
you should be in bed at latest, in bed feeling, you know, with your essential oils at 8:30.
Yeah. Well, that's my next step.
Because I personally take sleep very seriously in my life. And when I can get, for me, the minimum is 8 hours. If I can get 9, I'll take them. If I can get 9 hours, I feel that I'm at my best. I'm at my sharpest. I just feel great, just so good. Personally, different people, you know, are different. Other people can live on 7. Other people that I know, really great friends of mine, that can go on 5.
That's crazy.
And, you know, and I'm like, good for you.
I mean, she does. She has a rule for herself, right? She says that if she wakes up after 3, she just wakes up and, you know, just whatever, just keeps going. I was like, I don't know, 3 is too early. But I'm like, but maybe if I wake up at 4:30, then I'll just get up. But we'll see. I mean, I don't know. This is my second day. I know. You know, but I'm really excited because.
That's so good. I'm so proud of you.
I'm like, and I feel better. I feel so much better. I also did something. I said, God, you know, like, just help me. I will, whatever I tell you that I'm going to do that morning, I will accomplish it. I will do what I tell you. So I have an agreement. Like, nice. If I say I'm going to do, I don't know, I'm going to answer all my emails today. I don't care what time it is, but I have to finish what I'm saying out loud that I'm going to do. So that's how it started. And then after this weekend that I was just like cleaned my car. I like washed the kids' car seats and I was listening to this podcast. I was like, let's try this. You know, it was just like something that I was like, let me give it a try. And
that's awesome.
She also said that if it doesn't work out for you, just tweak it, change it, however you want to do. Whatever it is. I mean, I'm doing this, but whatever you guys want to do for yourselves, whatever just makes you feel happy, just do it.
Well, thank you for that. I think a lot of people are going to appreciate your honesty.
Thank you.
Let's take a break and go to our Super Mama Pick or Tip of the Week.
Aye. Okay. The Super Mamas want to help with your next trip to the most magical place on Earth, where you can be transported into stunning worlds, far-off galaxies, and exciting new stories. From the all-new Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway attraction that opens on March 4th, to epic adventures at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, to plenty of Epcot Festival fun. More to see and to do in all four Walt Disney World theme parks. And what better way to experience it than with $500 in Disney gift cards? Yes, we want to give one lucky winner $500 in Disney gift cards to start your Walt Disney World fund. To enter, use your Instagram account now through February 5th to upload a video or picture of your favorite Disney resort moment. This can be a throwback from a time you went with your entire family or even your most recent trip to the park. Be sure to tag Super Mamas and go to supermamas.com/WDW for official contest rules and to learn more. No purchase necessary. A purchase or payment of any kind will not increase your chances of winning. The Disney gift card can be used at select participating locations at Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, Disney Cruise Line, Disney Store locations in the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico, ShopDisney.com, Disney Photo Pass, Adventures by Disney, Aulani, at Disney Resort and Spa, and Disney's Beach Resort. It cannot be used towards the purchase of a Disney location for a membership. Visit DisneyGiftCard.com for complete terms and conditions. Potential winner will be notified via Instagram or email on or around February 6, 2020. Additional restrictions may apply. Okay, so we're back with our pick or tip of the week. You want to start?
Sure. Well, as you guys know, I'm still on my no shopping situation, sabbatical oath, whatever you want to call it.
I'm not.
Is it though? Like, is it great? Like, you have no idea how much FOMO I'm having of this Ivy Park Adidas launch, where I couldn't buy anything, and I think that was like that really tested me. Like, think about it. Like,
yeah.
Like I could have made an excuse and be like, yeah, but like, this is different. I didn't.
That's dope. That's amazing.
And honestly, I mean, I didn't get to like sit there and like, as soon as it launched, like, you know, but I was really looking forward to it. And I saw it and I was just like crying inside. But these are things that get me excited now. And I want to give you my pick of the week. It's going to be my all-time favorite pen. Mm-hmm.
That you got as a gift yesterday.
Well, I stole it from my accountant, but
not really, because you know.
I mean, I just said, "Oh my god, this is my favorite pen. How do you have this pen? I love this pen. I've lost all of them. Can I take it? Thank you." And he was like, "You didn't even get a chance for me to say yes, but here, take two."
He gave me a red one.
I absolutely love this pen. I have no idea where I found it, how I got to it, but this is my all time favorite pen, and I'm so glad that. That destiny brought us back together again because I lost one. And of course, I can't buy anything for myself, so I can buy pens. So I'm taking care of this one. The brand is called Energel. It's made in Mexico, by the way. Oh, actually, no.
It's Pentel.
It's Pentel.
Pentel.
Okay, it's Pentel. The type is Energel Liquid Gel Ink. The tip, the needle tip is 0.7 mm. And it's blue. I mean, the ones that I always use are blue, but apparently they come in red and different. I'm sure they come in black too.
Yeah.
It's sturdy. It writes wonderful when you're, I love this too. This is my favorite pen to journal with. In fact, I wrote my affirmations with it this morning and I felt so good because as you're writing, it doesn't smear on your pinky.
I should get that.
I have a lot of, when I journal a lot, it's, it kind of sucks that your pinky's just like a good a color. It doesn't smear. It just, it's light. It makes my handwriting pretty. I don't know. I can't.
Get that.
It's the most amazing, incredible pen. I just realized it was made in Mexico, which I think is why it's so bomb. I mean, I hope they treat their people right, whoever's making this. But again, Pentel Energel Liquid Gel Liner, needle tip 0.7. This is the kind of things that get me excited. If anybody from Pentel is listening, please send me some more free pens. Or I'll just go to my accountant's office and steal them from him.
Okay. My tip, this Christmas, I requested a few things and I got. My husband got me, it's called the Party of Four from Dry Bar. And it has four different things for your hair. What I like it is that they also have like travel sizes.
Ooh, so I love travel size.
It's the best because I have been traveling with them. But it has dry shampoo, which is really good. I really like it.
Aside from traveling with dry shampoo, it's always a great way to have it in your purse, mm-hmm. just randomly. Mm-hmm. Just
refresh. There's another one that comes in the Party of Four that is called the Triple Sec, which is like at the end and you finish styling. There's the
not to be confused with Triple Sec and Margaritas. Nope. But keep going.
Hot Toddy and Prep, which is just like, you know, prepares your hair in the morning for the heat and it helps you with just styling. And I have been looking for products just to style my hair. And I got this as a gift from someone a while ago and I ran out. So my husband got this four for me and they're just perfect. And I have been traveling with them. Right now they're $40 for all four. Go to drybar.com. It's not sponsored, but I really like this product. So awesome. That's my tip. And it helps me in the morning. Just get out of the door.
That's awesome. I love hair stuff.
I love hair stuff too now.
Yeah. Hair stuff is the best. All right.
Anyway.
Let's get to our amazing interview. If you're not inspired enough by Paulina's like new year, better me.
Well, you know, we did say this was 2020, the year with vision and action.
Yeah. Yeah. You're already doing it. But this year, this week on the podcast, we have the incredible, amazing Blanca Gonzalez, who is an industry trailblazer and began her career at Nike in LA in 2002 as a key member of the Nike Entertainment Marketing Team. She then moved over to Nike's iconic Blue House Energy Center as a brand manager, playing an instrumental role in forging relationships with top influencers from LA and across the globe on behalf of the brand. Since then, she has played several positions on the Nike team and was also able to fulfill her dream of tapping into her Mexican culture and heritage by assuming the position of GM of Sportswear and Action Sports for Nike de Mexico. She currently holds one of her dream jobs as the GM and VP of Nike LA West Territory. She's extremely passionate about LA, the city of athletes. All right, that's me, I'm like a wannabe athlete. Developing teams, mentoring women, and being an advocate for children with disabilities. She has relentless energy and highly values her two careers, Nike and being a mother of three beautiful children. Without further ado,
here is our interview with Blanca Gonzalez.
Hi, Blanca.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming. I'm so excited to have you. I'm such a fan.
I'm excited to be here.
I'm a fan of yours.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, of course.
No, we're not going that far.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about you. How many kids do you have? Who do you live with?
Oh my God. So I have a little bit of a small circus, but I live with my husband, uh-huh. my beautiful husband, and I have three beautiful children. I have twin girls who are nine. Yes.
You have twin girls.
You have twins?
Yes, they're nine now. I think acting like 13, but working with that piece of it. And then I have this magical boy, Mateo. He has special needs. He has Down syndrome, and he has been the joy of our family. Our secret weapon is our nanny that lives with us. Yeah. She's been with us for 10 years.
She lives with you?
Yeah, she's been with me since Mexico, when I lived in Mexico. So that's our family unit. We've been together since everything started.
So awesome. How old is Mateo?
Mateo's 7 years old. Oh, wow. And he just got an award last week. I'm so proud. Oh, for good, like, positive attitude and hard work.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was like everything I always like cherish and try to instill in him, and he's that's rocking amazing. It. Yeah, he's...
Congratulations to you too.
Thank because, you. Like, it was a proud moment. It was a mama moment.
Yeah, you know, the kids are a reflection of ourselves. Ay, yes. Dios mío.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I know. My kids are
too independent. Till I'm like, my mom used to tell me that you're so independent. Now I see it with, you know, the girls and Mateo. I'm like, oh my God.
How is it like everything. To have twin girls?
You know, it was at first, I was hospitalized for 8 weeks. Oh, wow. They're called Momo twins. They're even more special. It's one placenta, one bag. So nothing like basically separates them. So they'll. Only 400 pregnancies a year. Can you believe that? And that's, of course, me.
Oh, my God.
So the only thing they know is that at week 25 to 26, they hospitalize you and they attach you to these like gadgets and they monitor their heartbeats because that could be cord compression, cord entanglement. But so that journey started there. It was beautiful with them because, you know, I can't stand still. I run 100 miles an hour. So I've had to learn to pause, you know.
Yep.
And then I really started really like focusing on them and spending the time with them for 8 weeks in a hospital. And then they were in the NICU. There were 3 little pounds. But it has been a beautiful thing, but also a challenging thing. You know, they both have their personalities. They have this love-hate relationship every day.
Are they what are they called? Fraternal twins? Or
identical.
Identical twins?
And even more connected because, like they said, I have actually ultrasounds of them hugging.
I have to
send them to you guys.
Yes, please.
What? It's like incredible. Yes, like not many people could say that. Yeah, they're hugging, and some of the ultrasounds I have.
How do they get along now?
That's what I'm saying. It's like they pull their hair now. They love each other, but they cannot be away from each other for a minute.
Do you show the picture? Like, look, you hugged her when you were inside of
me.
And
I tell them, I put up with a lot already from the beginning, so you guys have to be nice to me. Yes, it's incredible. It's been. I feel like I've had an incredible journey with my three kids. You know, the twins, and then Mateo. Just also incredible stories even before he was born that I experienced.
Tell me some of the stories about Mateo, because I find you and Mateo's like story fascinating, and also just the way that you speak of him and how he is as a person. It is magical. He is like a magical child.
Yes. And I tell you, it started before, like I tell you, I lived in Mexico, and I was in El Mercado buying, you know, fresh fruit for the kids. And it got really hot. So I sat down, you know, I was like about six months pregnant. And I was sitting down just waiting for my husband to finish, you know. And then all of a sudden there was a mom and a son. They passed by me and they were holding hands. And the little kid let go of the mom's hand and he ran to my belly and hugged it. But the craziest thing was that when he looked up, he had Down syndrome.
Oh my God.
I didn't know anything at that moment, you know, so it was one of those things that stayed very present for me and Peter, my husband. And then when he was born, they basically, you know, told us after 3 days in the hospital that there was a 50-50 chance that he had Down syndrome. He had some characteristics, but not fully developed, you know, so they didn't know. And he was 5 pounds, so he was little. So then, you know, Peter and I, you know, of course, being parents, you know, with the angst and the worriness, but we grabbed our son. We were in the car. I was in the back, and then Peter was in the front driving, and then we saw each other in the mirror, and we both started crying because we knew, like, we're like, we don't need a blood test. You know, we know that our son has Down syndrome, because it was that moment that connected us back. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of crazy moments that way. And even when I was in high school, I was always very active in high school as senior president, and I always want to hopefully, you know, represent everybody and fight for everybody's rights. And I remember I used to have a friend, Larry, who's still my best friend's cousin. He's 40 now. He had Down syndrome, and I used to always protect him from everybody because kids, you know, of course, could be mean sometimes.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was 18, I even said to myself, I want a child with Down syndrome so I can change the world. So.
Aww.
You're so God, stop. Like, you're so incredible.
So he's helping us change the world. Yeah. And, I mean, and everything, even when after, you know, we went to the doctors and they confirmed it. Yeah. And now I'm part of the Special Olympics board, and I've been working with some of the hospitals because they, instead of telling us, I mean, of course, they have to tell you everything that could happen, you know, and the things that you have to worry about with, you know, his condition. But my husband, we're very positive people. He looked at the doctor and said, do you have anything positive to say?
That's,
you know,
that's so good.
That's so true though.
Yes. And then he was like kind of floored, you know, and I've kind of been talking to a lot of the hospitals to say, hey, we need better education around this, you know, how to help parents, because most of the time they don't, you know, they make you so scared. Mm-hmm. And what I've lived, yes, you know, there's moments that there's challenges like anything raising a child, right? You go through other things, but in general, like, it's been one of the most rewarding, best experience of my life. And that's kind of what I want to make sure I project to every woman that has a child, and even a child with different disabilities. I know, you know, we all go through it, but yeah. I think the attitude and being able to show that and show that light, that's kind of where my mission is with him.
Yeah. I think, like, as a mother, you become your child's advocate. Like, there's nobody that's going to fight for your child more than you.
No.
So I think it's just, it doesn't matter what your child is, looks like, has. Like, for you, it's the most perfect child, and you're going to defend that child for.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's, I think that's the tiger, you know, comes out of every mom. You know, we love our children, and we want to make sure that they're set up in this world for a better world, right? And I do. I strive for that for him, and then for the girls, you know.
Yeah.
Being a woman, being Latina, you know, there's still a lot of opportunities in this world for us. So that's the things that I strive for, is to hopefully be role models for my kids, but also a role model to our communities.
Yeah.
Wow.
How did you start your career? Where did you start your career?
Where do you work?
Tell I started when I was two. My mom was a seamstress, really, you know, and she actually makes her own clothes. She's so creative. And I've loved product since I was two. And, you know, I came from Mexico when I was three. You know, I'm the youngest of five. And of course, you know, we come all for this American dream. We didn't have a lot of money. So I had Barbies, but I didn't have money to buy clothes for Barbies. So my mom would bring me all the, you know, extra scraps, and I would make my own Barbie clothes. So at 2 years old and three, I was making my own Barbie clothes. So I always believe that.
You were a Barbie fashion designer at three.
Yes. Plaids. No. So I think that's where it all started, my connection to product. And then as I, you know, as life went by, I've always, I was in high school, and me and my sister, you know, we were really like united. We're 2 years apart. And we were the first that we said, we're going to go to college. You know, we're going to change kind of the way, you know, kind of trajectory our family's been, because no one had been to college from the United States. You know, we were all immigrants. We were still, you know, my parents, I don't know, English, you know, and all these things. So we made a pact. And then when I went to high school, and I'll never forget this, my high school counselor told me I wasn't college material. And it's unfortunate, but I talk to a lot of kids today, and it still happens. And it like drives me insane. So when I went home, my sister, you know, that I said is 2 years older, Diana, she's like, what's wrong with you? Why are you so sad? And I said, well, my counselor just told me this. She's like, oh, no, girl, like, we're going to make this happen. And you and I are going to stick together, and we're going to do it. And we were the first to graduate college. She's a teacher. She's an educator. Always try to make me be the student. I didn't want to be the student. I wanted to be the creative. So it's interesting that we're both doing our passion, you know, we're driving our passion. So it's really, really great. So that's kind of my journey started there. And then since I was little, I've always liked to work. So I started working when I was 14. It's a funny story, but I started
my career. What's your first
job? You're not going to believe this. I worked at a car wash. And you're not going to believe the skill sets I learned, because he was our family doctor.
The car wash owner was your family doctor?
Yeah. He owned a car wash.
Car wash on the side?
Very diverse.
He had a side business. Yeah. Car wash. But
diversify. Yes. You know?
And I told him, I said, hey, I really want to work. I want to make money to buy my own things. Because my parents, you know, they could provide me food and shelter. But, you know, it was middle school going into high school, you know, brands and everybody wants to look cool. So he's
like, you want your Guess jeans.
Yes. Guess shirts. That's what I really want.
That's what happened.
You know, the 90s.
Yes.
And, you know, so then my first job there was actually writing tickets. Okay. So there was a 3-star and a four star and a 5-star. And if I sold 5 stars, he would give me an extra dollar.
Ooh.
So girl, I sold all the 5 stars.
So you were hustling.
Yeah. So I was not afraid to, you know, I learned to communicate.
Yeah.
I learned to talk to people. I learned to not be afraid to use my voice and convince people. So I became a salesperson.
And to upsell more than anything.
Yeah. And I look back at that experience and I was like, wow, you know, you would not believe all the fundamentals that it taught me. And then from there, I went to high school, and then he started giving me a lot more responsibility over the weekends. I actually managed the car wash. You know, I would make all the deposits and manage, you know, the workers. And I mean, I was 16, 17. I didn't even know what I was doing, but I learned, and, you know, and then I went to college, and then, I was in an interview for The Gap to work as a seasonal help. And then, of course, I got the job. And then like 6 months later, I'm like a store manager. but I learned it was really because of those bases, you know, so my career has always started
fast paced.
I started in retail, you know, product, The Gap back then. It was everything the 90s, you know, the jean wall and the white t-shirts. And then from there, I went to the fashion industry. I worked in fashion consulting. And then one day my girlfriend sent me the job, the first job I had at Nike, which was entertainment marketing, which is running their whole showroom for all influencers and, you know, tastemakers and talent in the city. And I even told her, like, don't be sending me this at work, you know. And then it rained in LA. You guys know this. It never rains in LA. Yeah. So
it was the one time it rained in LA. And I still remember that day.
Yeah, I still remember. And I was like, I did pause because I had nothing to do. Nobody, you know, in LA, nobody goes out. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the profile of the job and I was like, oh my God, this is so me. I should apply. So I applied and, you know, 2 weeks later, I get a call and 18 years later, I'm here. So it's been an incredible journey. It's been a full circle. I mean, I've been able to do incredible things with the brand. You know, I've worked in Mexico, which is a personal and business thing I've loved. I've worked global. I've worked geographies. I've worked in women's and sportswear. I've done several amazing jobs. And today I'd say I'm in my dream job. I always wanted to be the GM of Los Angeles because I love the city. I'm Angeleno at heart. And I just wanted to come back to do what's right for our communities and show that there's so much potential in the city. And it's been exciting to see the last 4 years that I, you know, my team and I have really put LA on the map. So it's been a great journey.
What does your job entail as a GM of LA? Like,
oh my God,
it's like, what is like your day? What are your days like? What is it? I have this fascination with corporate culture myself. I always picture myself like as a corporate executive. Obviously, you wear Nikes every day, but in my mind, I would be wearing a suit and like high heels every day. And you know what I mean? Yeah, like that idea. Is it like that?
It is with sneakers, but it is, every day is different. I think I always say this to everybody, like being the GM of Los Angeles, you know, you are working with our global to geography, you know, teams. I'm working on strategy, but then you're also running a facility. You're running the team here, you know, so it is not only about business, it's about team. Mm-hmm. And then typically that's the job at a corporate, but then as the GM of Los Angeles, you have another layer, which is being part of the communities, right? Being part of government and talking to our mayors, you know, and strategizing how we want to leave the city in a better place, you know, and utilizing a lot of our efforts that we have at Nike to be able to hopefully give youth more opportunities. And, you know, and I think bringing sport to them is so critical. I mean, I think about nowadays, you know, they're taking PE programs and all this stuff, and we have more mental, you know, health issues in our, and I really do believe is sport is important just to play, to move, you know, I think it helps you. I know that when I don't go work out, you know, I feel a little edgy. So I think it's so important. And that's kind of the power that we're trying to do is really bring sport to everybody and create access to sport. So like my job is multidimensional. You know, I meet with people, incredible people. I meet with youth. I meet with the city officials. I have, you know, meetings with our leadership team and campus. And then we talk about amazing opportunities, not only for Los Angeles, but how we can move and transcend North America and even the world, you know? Yeah. So those are the things that we do on a constant basis.
We were at dinner not too long ago, and we spoke about the importance of play and sport. And I know that's a huge initiative that Nike has right now. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about that and what we learned from that dinner you guys took away from the dinner.
It was such a magical dinner and moment because, like you say, most people, you could tell genuinely people are so involved and they want to create a change and they know this is critical for our next generation, right? So I think that was the most thing magical about that dinner, that everybody was so engaged. And I think now it's like, how do we bring it forward, right? I think for us, you know, if we just look at Los Angeles landscape, we see, you know, there's a lot of girls dropping off, you know, 2 times the rate than boys. So how do we create, you know, implement these new ways of hopefully, you know, training female coaches? You know, we're training female coaches. We're working with the mayor's office, you know, and our city teams to really create female coaches because we believe female coaches not only become a coach, but they also become a role model and they also become a mentor, right? And more, you guys know this, growing up in the city, not a lot of them reflect like us, yeah. you know, yeah. we need to help Latinas or, you know, anybody from all walks of life to really be able to see themselves. So I think that's the biggest thing that we're doing. And then when we start mapping LA, you look at the different, you know, neighborhoods and pockets, and there's areas, as you guys know, that it's, there's lack of access mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of participation because it's expensive now to play sports. So how do we bring sport into those areas? Right. And then, like you say, and then the third is just really being very thoughtful how we work with, you know, the city to help amplify these things, you know, and this messages. Also, we're working, you know, with, like, eventually we'll work with LA 2028, you know, as they kind of launch, you know, there's going to be opportunities to bring more sport. I mean, a lot of these kids are already telling us they want to be the next, you know, Olympians for our city, which is an exciting time. That's, I think, wonderful. It's a call to action for all of us as, you know, as community leaders yeah. and, you know, people that love this city. Our kids are telling us that hopefully they can have the access and the opportunity to play sports. So hopefully one day have that dream.
I know I realized during that dinner how different we grew up from the way our children are growing up.
Yes.
You know, because we had so much playtime, so much playtime.
Oh my God,
I remember
yeah.
like our legs were hurt at night. And my kids don't have that anymore, you know? During their book tour, somebody asked me, like, what's your favorite thing? Like, why do you like your children going to Mexico? And I was like, oh, because they're free.
Yeah.
Because they're free to run and play. And that's something that we don't have here. And during that dinner, it got me thinking, like, oh my God, that's true. Like, my kids don't go out and, you know, we got las agarradas, las escondidas, yeah. like, just run and burn that energy that they have, you know? And they're just stuck in a screen sometimes, a lot of the times. And then, you know, it's just so different. Like, we're improving in so many ways, but we're also lacking in some other ways. And I love it that you guys are, like, bringing that back, because that's giving us, like, awareness as parents, you know?
Yeah, and like you say, making it fun, you know? I think we're all competitive, you know, but also just keeping the fun.
Not all, honey. I know. Not all, okay? Blanca's like, I won, right? I won this interview, right? I'm like, no, it was an interview, Blanca. It's not a contest.
Yeah, so I think it's that, you know, and I think that's the huge opportunity that we do in general. Like, that's our biggest, I'd say, mission.
That's
yeah.
so awesome.
Yeah.
I want to talk about also, like, your career and what it was like to work in corporate America. And do you have any advice for young women today who look like us, who are starting off in their path? I'm assuming you were probably, and you probably were in instances when you were not only the only woman in the room, but probably the only woman of color in the room.
Yes.
So, and people always talk about those experiences, but because my sister and I don't come from that world, I always love to hear other people's experiences, because it can help someone else who's listening today.
No, most definitely. I mean, I have a lot of experiences. I think the biggest ones that I would say is I was very fortunate. I think every woman that's listening to this, make sure you have a mentor, you know, mm-hmm. or somebody that, or even your peer or your girlfriend that can really help you through, you know, these tough, you know, challenges that you might face as you're developing and growing and trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. So I had a really good mentors throughout my career, you know, where they gave me tough love, which I think is important, because we also have to be self-aware of our strengths, but our opportunities, right? So I think being able to have somebody that can really help you through those times, I think is critical. The other thing I've had to learn, and, you know, I think culturally too, you know, us Latinas, we they teach us to be humble, you know, to work hard, mm-hmm. and that's all important. But I think I've also had to really enable myself to learn to have a voice. And I would tell Latinas, don't be afraid to use your voice and being authentic and being who you are. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you that when I started Nike till today, I hope people would say this, but I do believe it. I've been always, you know, proud of my heritage, proud of who I am, you know, and really showing corporate America what this, our culture is and how mm-hmm. beautiful it is. And there's so much opportunities with us, right? So I think being able to use your voice and not be afraid to use a voice. And I think it gets scary at times, but I've had to work through that piece of it. And I think when you face also adversity, because like you say, and it was the opposite. When I worked in Mexico, I was the only woman director. It was all men. And, you know, not to generalize the country, but, you know, there was a little bit more stereotypes mm-hmm. and a little bit more machismo.
Not to serve as a country, but let me tell you how it really is down there.
It was really, really tough. And I remember, you know, my first 3 months, I really thought, you know, because I know the language, I'm Latina, I'm from Mexico, you know, I was born there. I realized, you know, it was completely a different experience for me. And I was struggling, you know, and I remember, and I'll never forget this, one of the directors grabbed me and he's like, hey, he goes, you're here for a reason, right? And I said, of course. He's like, because I was running sportswear. That's always been the sneaker culture thing is my thing. I love sneakers. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're here for a reason. You're hired to do a great job. And he's like, and I believe in you. So he goes, go home, relax, and come back and just prove to them that that's why you're here for. And I just took that notion and I didn't let the noise get to me. You know, I was there for a purpose and, you know, I was helping drive and create change. And I helped even in the office to create change because there's, you know, things that, you know, mm-hmm. we grew up with things that were the norm. So I tried to instill that. And, you know, 4 years later, like when I was leaving, I had men crying. So it felt really good. So I was I was like, you know, but it was the most also amazing experience too. I mean, I got to experience my whole country, you know, travel, perfected. I think now probably not so much, but my Spanish, I started forgetting my English. But it was a wonderful experience from a business perspective and getting to know, you know, mm-hmm. the Nike globally, a different lens, but then also learning about myself and my culture and being even more connected to my roots than I've been. So it was, and then I met my husband there. So it was just, it was meant to be.
were you already had kids when you were there?
I met my husband there.
Yes, you said you were pregnant.
So then we had the twins and then I had the twins here because it was a high risk pregnancy. Then I had them here and then went back to Mexico. So the girls lived actually their first 18 months in Mexico.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
How did you channel that frustration out? Because I understand someone telling you, hey, do this and then come back, take some time. But I don't think it's as easy as going home and being like, okay, great pep talk. Now I'm going to change the world, right? What did you do to help channel out that frustration?
I think one of the biggest things that I've tried to do is not let the noise get to me first. You know, it's hard. You know, I always tell people, don't let anybody win you, you know, like, cause you don't want to give your power away. You know, your power is your power. So mm-hmm. one, the most things I try to do once I face a lot of hard things is just even sometimes laugh. Laughter is really good. It helps. It cures a lot of, it eases things. And then I'm very purposeful, you know, so one of the things I've learned is to be very strategic. So, you know, there's a lot to do, right? And everything from our lives as being moms to the career that we're living. But I try to be very strategic. I go, what's going to have the biggest impact, right? To drive the business or drive the business, the people's needs, right? And I really focus on those things, you know, and drive that impact and stay focused. And then you start seeing like the results. And I always say results, you know, can't lie. So, I think those are the biggest things I do is tell people like work hard, be strategic and show results and all those things, everything else that starts mounting up, you know? So, and I try to deal with those things. Cause like you say, if you let the noise get to you and everything, you're not going to accomplish anything. So think about your purpose, think about what you want to do and drive those things and stay with them. You know, don't let the things like what people say to you or what people think. It's like, no, just know and believe in yourself and believe in your purpose. And I do believe like some way the path opens up, you know, you have bumps along the way and you learn from them, but that's kind of have channeled my, you know, I think the adversities I face and I try to always educate and try to be positive. I think it's because if you're become part of that negativity, then you kind of go spiral. Yeah. Right.
What are some of the things that you do? Like, I mean, from what you're telling me, your life just sounds like so busy. I mean, I'm sure you're like, how do you take care of yourself? How do you try to like balance and keep it? Cause you know, every time I've seen you, you're always smiling. You're always happy. And you know, that's what I want to do. Cause sometimes I'm just so tired and stressed and I'm just like, I don't want to talk to anybody right now. You know, don't even look at me right now. And I'm still
I
like,
I have those days too.
You know, but what do you do to just take care of yourself?
I think, you know, and I learned this from a great mentor too. I was always the first one in, the last one out, you know, it's like, I want to work hard and prove myself. And, you know, she taught me, she's like, you know, Blanca, like there's always these like peaks, right? There's never valleys, right? And when there's a valley, she's like, take advantage and not feel guilty. I think women, we tend to feel really guilty
all the time.
And today, you know, I try to spend like even in a week, I go get my nails done or take a massage or do something for myself without the kids, without the husband, without anything. And I pause for myself. And honestly, that's given me so much energy and it's made me reflect and be in, like you say, in a better mood. Because when I didn't have that, I was grumpy. I was tired. I was angry. angry, you know what I mean? And now I've learned to pause and take care of me and not feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
It's taken me a long time, and sometimes I work on it and then I schedule it too. I put it on my Outlook. I make it a priority. And now, like, more and more, you know, I find those moments and I feel like those are the things that I've been trying to do to have my peace of mind. But I think it's important for women. And I think for us, especially, you know, our audiences here, like, we tend to always give everything. You know, I give. But it's okay to receive, and it's okay to receive for yourself, you know? So I think those are the things
that's important.
Yeah. And not feel guilty. I think that's the most important thing, and not to be too hard on ourselves.
How do you instill that into your children? Because my sister and I always have this conversation about, you know, we come from immigrant parents. We saw firsthand how they work. We saw firsthand the sacrifice, the growing up with the need of going to work at 14 years old because you didn't have 10 pairs of shoes.
Yeah.
You know, today we're so blessed with great careers, with a wonderful family, with support system, with friends, with abundance, with Amazon delivering something in your door and
6 hours. Postmates.
1 hour. Yeah. How do you instill that ethic, work, commitment, values into your children?
You know, it's something I deal with every day. And I would also say I talk about it every day, and I talk it to all my friends too. And I always ask them, because I think that's something, it's a journey, right?
Yeah.
And the only thing that makes me feel proud, you know, is that the girls and, you know, Mateo, they're like, their core is family. And that's, and for me, like, I'm like, okay. And they've said this to me. They're like, mommy, that's not my life. That was your life. Sorry. You know? Yes. Because I used to tell them, I'm like, Mija, I was only got one Christmas gift, and you have three, so you should, you know. And they're like, mommy, that's your life, but that's not my life.
Oh my God, they say that?
Yes.
I haven't gotten that yet. They're like, I'm like, you don't know what it was like living with grandma.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
Or when they get mad when you pull their hair.
Yeah.
Like when I brush my kid's hair, because he has long hair, he's like, oh, mommy, that's so hard. I'm like, si supieras, like, but it really, it's like to get your hair, like.
Y la chancla.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. When was it? The other day? I don't know. What were we watching? I don't remember. Anyway, it was a video, a funny video on TikTok or something. And there was someone that came out, Michael Myers, right? During Halloween. But then the mom came out with a chancla. Oh my. And my daughter, she was, mommy, it's because she doesn't know the power of the chancla. And I was like, yes, like, the chancla against Michael Myers. No, nobody wins against the chancla, all right?
That's so funny.
I know,
funny.
And they...
Yeah, so I think what I try to instill, like you say, is values, you know, and I do, you know, thank God we still have family in Mexico. My husband's from Colombia, so we go down there and, you know, we do work around the communities and give back. So I think they know, I think, and you know, they're 9, so they're still learning, but I do believe that they know that, you know, they have a lot more than a lot of people do. And then I make them donate their toys and clean, and then go and, you know, give it to a local organization and stuff. And then more and more now I want them to do volunteer work. I was waiting for them to get a little older, but I want to make sure that they're out there, you know, giving back to the communities. And those are the things I think will help them, you know, realize, like you said, I don't have the solution. If you guys haven't, please let us know.
No, we always have conversations. Yes. We always ask the question, because I want to know what other women are doing, or especially women that come from immigrant households when you had nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think it was that, out of that way, you know, what made us who we are today. Yeah. Yeah. So I just wonder about the privilege that they're
chores,
growing up
in. You know, and I don't give them everything. They have to work for it. You know, I say every week if you do X, Y, and Z, you get, you know, $2, $3, and they save up, you know, and then they buy their things. And I make them use their money. I take the money from them, you know, because they have to understand value.
Yeah.
You know, and I think more and more they're starting to see that. But I do a lot of those things. I just don't buy them everything. Don't give them everything. And then I make them, like, say, hey, you have to do, you know, try your best at school, you know, get good grades. And then also I always say do chores in the house, you know, and then, you know, we'll give you some incentives, but then, you know, you have to use your money for those things that, you know, you got to earn these things.
Yeah. Remember when I was growing up, like, when we had to have good grades, and it was up until like we moved here, but in Mexico, we always had to have good grades.
In Mexico, but here, they were too worried. They were too busy.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember, like, if I had like a bad grade, my dad would be like, what else do you have to do? Are you working?
Yeah.
I was like, not yet. But at 8, when we started working, I was like, yes, I am. But, you know, it's also, I always ask myself that question, you know, I'm like, are they learning that? Are they learning? You know, I started working really young too. So now that my daughter reached that age where I started working, which was 8 years old, I'm like, should I start having her work? Like, should I take her to the restaurant and like do real work? Not just come with me and sit right next to me, but actually doing things. I know, is that going to look bad? Are people going to start like, you know, telling me that I'm like exploiting my child? But, you know, it's just, I want her to grow up with that same
responsibility.
Yeah. You know, she helps me a lot. She does, you know, her bed and she serves cereal to her to her sisters. But outside of the house, like, is it too early? When is it too early? You know, it's just so much that goes through my mind now because I want her to have that same love for work that we do. And it's hard here.
It is. And that's what I say. I don't think there's that perfect formula. Mm-hmm. I think you just got to keep trying and teaching them and letting them see the world in different ways, you know, and letting them hopefully understand how like privileged they are in so many ways. Cause like you said, there's a lot of kids. I always tell them like, if you're going to eat the food, you eat it all, you know, cause there's so many kids that don't even have an apple in a week. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I always try to teach them and I show them videos but you know, it is a continuous and I don't think there's a perfect formula for it.
Like a great poet once said, un poeta mexicano, los caminos de la vida no son como yo pensaba. Okay. I have one last question for you. Well, two last questions for you. Number one, are you loving anything right now? Are you absolutely like fascinated in love with something? Like you're so into something right now?
Anything.
I mean, could be a show, could be a book, could be an app. What are you absolutely loving right now?
Oh my God. My kids, I love, I mean, it's,
I'm really into my children.
No, but I love like right
a
now,
book,
we,
a show?
No, we've been doing, we love cooking.
Oh, awesome.
So, and the girls love cooking with us. You know, we could make from desserts to cooking at home. I want them to have that essence of family and cooking together. So, and the good thing is my husband too really likes cooking now too. So we do a lot of cooking together.
That's awesome.
I'm into it. We look up, hopefully, you know, I'll get some of your recipes in the book. But we try to do fun things, recipes, try to cook together. That's think that's one of the things I'm into right now. Because, you know, like you say, I'm so busy. I try to find the moments try to put moments that are quality with the family. And I don't know. The kitchen, I think for Latinos, has always been a thing, you know, for us. But the kitchen and the food and all that, it all comes together. And we have some amazing times. We laugh, we dance, we listen to music and we cook.
I love that.
So I'm so into that.
One last question, I promise. No. And we'll let you go. How many pair of Nikes do you have? Like how many, does your closet look like? How do you keep them together?
I think it's my closet. I think it's my garage. So I have over 300 pairs.
What? And how do you pick what to, like, do you ever have dirty shoes on?
I have pictures with Polaroids on the shoes, right? So I know which ones. So I've been Nike 18 years. And then the funny story is when I went to Mexico, I didn't even take half of my collection. I took about 150. and it got stopped. And the head of HR from Mexico calls me and she's like, Blanca, they don't want to, you know, send your customs doesn't want to send your stuff. And I was like, why? They're like, because there's 150 pairs of Nike size 7. And I'm like, they're all mine. You better bring it back. I was like, whatever you can, you have to get my shoes. So
I don't care about anything. Yeah,
leave everything behind. I need my
shoes. And you know, now my garage, half of my garage is all sneakers.
Can you imagine when your daughters wear a size 7?
Yeah, I have to put locks probably because you know. And then there's some on ice, you know, that I don't wear.
Ice, is that like a term?
Yeah, okay, it's a term. It's basically you like hot heat product that you know is going to be worth something. You just don't wear. You lock it up. You keep it on ice. And then when I
thought literally it was in
It was like, do you keep it in ice?
In a fridge?
It's not like a way to maintain the leather. We're so not into sneaker culture. Can you tell?
I have about 3.
But you know, you get into it.
My husband loves.
It's not like 300 deep gloves.
No, but he probably like has.
Okay,
like
what are like some of your most prized possessions?
Well, you know, and I won, this is the ice, that's what I tell you. There's a GM summit, called the Sneaker Ball. you know, and I was like, oh, I'm going to win that sugar ball. So I went and I got Mr. Cartoons, you know, back in the day. Because we worked in that collaboration.
The Cortez?
Yeah, the Cortez, the Aztec ones. So I won sneaker ball with those. But I had not worn them in like 15 years. And I have like the first Kobe's, the first LeBron's, you know. Just so many in the collection that I have. And I have like all the Mr. Cartoons.
Yeah, but like, how do you choose what to like wear that day? Like, do you choose shoes first?
First.
Okay, got it.
And then there's always a story.
And do you always wear sneakers?
Always. Even nowadays, I've been so bad. Even at weddings, I'm like, sorry, I don't like heels.
What?
You know, my husband's day he goes, can you just wear some heels one day? I'm like, no, I love sneakers. And they're more comfortable and they hurt my feet. So I love them. It's been 18 years. I think the last 3-4 years, I don't think people have ever seen me with.
Yeah, I've never seen you with that.
No. Never.
So sneakers first, and then you're like, okay, out of this, let's build up.
Yes.
Got it. Are you like, you remember that movie Clueless?
Yeah.
Cher, you go in your computer and you're okay, these ones are the ones for today.
Do you have any fave models right now, like this season? Or does it go from this left, right, left, like one day Cortez?
I mean, I'm a Cortez girl. That's my OG always.
Yeah.
I think every color, every collaborator. I mean, that's just, I mean, the other day too, my boss is like, I was wearing something like an Air Max. And he's like, I've never seen you without a Cortez. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. You haven't seen me. You know, but I typically stay Cortez range. I do like the Air Max one and sometimes the Air Force one, but typically I'm a Cortez girl. I love the Cortez.
Awesome.
One.
What's up?
Okay. Thank you so much. Where can girls follow you on Instagram? Where can they like stalk you and Google you and fangirl you?
It's a fun handle. It's Bglow 23. So it was funny. It's a funny story, but people used to always like make fun. They said I had like the Jennifer Lopez laugh. So then they call me Bglow, and then 23. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's a funny thing.
Bglow. Oh, got it.
Yes.
J-Lo, Bglow. Yes. Got it.
And then my favorite number is 23. So.
Oh, awesome. Jordan.
Jordan. Yes. Mm. And it's not because of Jordan, honestly. It's just, I don't know why I've always.
So you were always meant to be Nike.
Yes, I'm saying. In the City of Angels, you know, all this.
You know what? When I was in high school, I never got to have Jordans. The most I had was Pippen. The tennis shoes.
I had Jordans. I had, you know, the ones, my son has those now in red. He chose them in red. They're that shiny leather, like that. Almost
the satin ones?
Not satin. The ones that como parecen de plástico. Like it's like a shiny plastic, like the, whatever. Like
charol
kind of. Yeah, like charol. Yeah, like charol.
Tenis de charol.
Yeah, this is early 2000s, 2001 around, 2001 when those Jordans came out and they came out in baby blue and pink.
Oh yeah.
I had the baby blue ones, and I wish I still had them. They will be hot right now.
Oh yeah, very hot.
They will be hot right now. Well, my son has a red one. Thank you so much again. I hope you come back.
No, thank you so much.
It was so much fun.
No, me too. Awesome.
Thank you, Blanca.
Hey sisters, thank you so much for listening. Hope all of you guys are subscribed to our newsletter. If you're not, make sure you hit that subscribe button on supermamas.com. We will be sending out invites to upcoming events, promos, and super cool surprises your way. And of course, you can always keep up with us through the gram @_supermamas and on Twitter, also @_supermamas and in el face @supermamaspodcast.
Oh, one more thing. We want to hear your supermama moment of the week to share with all of you sisters. Call into our hotline 424-329-3707 and leave us a message, or simply email us a voice note to hello@supermamas.com. Very soon, we could be featuring you on the show. Please remember to leave your name and Instagram handle for a chance to be featured.
Much love, and
see you next week, Supermamas!